let her go. And in this same conversation, you should also make it clear that bad-mouthing her coworkers to others isn't acceptable either, and that she's expected to behave professionally and pleasantly while she's at work. Basically, this is the, your behavior is far over the bounds of what we will accept here, we take it seriously, and we're going to have zero tolerance for it going forward conversation. In addressing this, make sure that you don't get caught up in a long series of warnings to her. Behaving this way is sufficiently unacceptable that it warrants only a single warning and then firing. In fact, frankly, if you're 100% sure that the reports you've heard are true, I'd assume that you're going to need to let her go fairly soon because good employees just don't operate this way. And I'm talking about all of the behavior, not just the curses. And I'm highly skeptical that she's a stellar performer on every other front. Meanwhile, I would start reading up on counterspells, potions, and hexes, as you're probably going to need them. 32. Your employee won't take no for an answer. If you have an employee who doesn't ever seem to hear no and keeps pressing for things you've already declined, project assignments, a new office, a raise, or whatever it might be, the kindest thing you can do is be extremely firm and extremely clear so that the person truly hears the information you're conveying. For example, if your employee keeps pushing to take on an area of work that you can't or won't assign to her, say something like this. This has come up several times now, so I want to make sure that I'm being really clear with you. I hear you that you'd like to do more work on our events, but we're fully staffed in that area, and I need you to focus on the job we hired you for, which is bookkeeping. I don't foresee that changing. The bookkeeping work is a full-time job and will continue to be. I hope that's something you can accept and be happy with because we can't continue to revisit it. In most cases, that will solve the problem. But if it doesn't and the person continues to push, then you need to get away from addressing the request and instead address the inappropriate persistence. I really need you to hear me on this because you've continued to raise the issue despite my telling you that it's not something we can do. I know that this is important to you, and I've tried to be really transparent with you that it's not something we can do. We can't keep having the same conversation over and over. Knowing that the answer isn't going to change and that we can't keep revisiting this, what makes sense from here? 33. Your employee overstepped his authority. When an employee does something he isn't authorized to do on his own, the first thing to ask yourself is whether he should reasonably have known not to. Have you been clear with him about the boundaries of his authority and what sorts of things you want to be consulted on? If not, approach it from that angle. I realized that we never talked about how to handle it when something like this comes up. Dealing with the ethics board is high stakes, so if there's any further contact with them on this matter or anything else in the future, I need to be consulted before we respond. If there are broader lessons to be drawn as well, mention those too. Please come to me first with anything high stakes, such as legal issues, public statements, or anything dealing with governing boards. I need to sign off on anything we do in those areas before we do it. But if you think the employee should have known better, say something like this. I am concerned that you spoke to our reporter yesterday rather than sending the call to one of our spokespeople, as our policy directs you to do. What happened there? Followed by something like, I want to be clear that this is a policy we have in place for a reason, and it's important that you follow it. Going forward, if you think there might be a reason to do something that's against our policy, in this area or any other, come talk to me first and get my sign-off. If you just plunge ahead, that can end up being pretty serious. 34. Your employee has a bad attitude. The trick about addressing a bad attitude is to figure out how to articulate specifically what you're seeing that's reading as, quote, bad attitude, unquote, to you. That way, you can keep the focus on behaviors rather than on how the employee feels. Ultimately, it's okay for employees to feel however they want, as long as they're behaving in a way that's aligned with what you need from them. Plus, once you focus on the problematic behaviors, it will be much easier to address the, quote, bad attitude, unquote, issue the same way you would any other performance problem. For example, when you roll your eyes in meetings and give one-word answers to questions, people think you don't want to be there, and it shuts down conversation. What's going on? Everyone gets frustrated at work occasionally, but when you snap at coworkers or speak rudely to them, it will make people dread working with you. Yesterday, when Miguel asked you for that list of upcoming art exhibits, you sighed loudly and said that he should find it himself. Doing well in this role requires having good relationships with colleagues. And if people are afraid to approach you, it will impact your work and your success. I've noticed that you've been making a lot of comments lately about things patients do that annoy you. We all blow off steam now and then, but it's important that we talk about our patients with respect. I'm getting the sense that it's become harder for you to keep up a positive, compassionate attitude lately. Does that resonate with how you're feeling? When you shoot down people's ideas the way you did in yesterday's meeting, it makes people less likely to suggest new ideas in the future. I don't need you to cheerlead for every idea that comes up, and there's value in helping refine ideas and think through potential obstacles. But I'd like you to bring more of a sense of possibility to these discussions and look for ways that we could make something work rather than defaulting to assuming that we can't. 35. Communicating a decision from above that you don't agree with. One of the trickiest parts of management is your duty to represent your company's management team to your staff, even when you don't agree with their decisions. On the one hand, you have an obligation to your company and your own managers not to undermine their decisions when talking to your staff members. On the other hand, if you appear to be parroting the official line without thought or nuance, you'll lose credibility and create cynicism on your team. So how do you navigate situations where you need to communicate and or implement a decision that you don't agree with? The key is to be calm and matter of fact and note that there were factors to consider other than your team's own priorities. In some cases, like when your team legitimately worries about unforeseen negative consequences from the decision, it can make sense to agree to raise those concerns again down the road if necessary. It might sound like this. This isn't the decision that I would have made, but I know that they had to consider a number of competing factors, and ours weren't the only interests in play. I shared our concerns about X and Y, but there were other factors that the company needed to consider as well. Ultimately, this is the decision they felt made the most sense, given everything that was in play, including concerns outside our group. However, if X or Y does end up causing serious issues for us, I'll ask to revisit it at that point when we're able to share actual impacts. 36. Your employee wants you to promise confidentiality before sharing a concern. Sometimes an employee may ask to talk to you in confidence. It's tempting to immediately agree that you won't share whatever you're told. But doing that can cause problems because there are some pieces of information that, as a manager, you'll need to act upon, such as a harassment complaint or information about other serious wrongdoing. And if you promise confidentiality but then can't deliver it, you'll leave employees wary of coming to you in the future. The better option is to say something like this. I'll do my best to keep what you tell me off the record. But I want to be transparent that without hearing what you want to say, I can't promise you complete confidentiality. It's possible that I could end up being obligated to share it, but if that happens, I will make sure that you don't suffer any repercussions for coming to me about it. That last piece usually gets at what people are worried about, and by addressing that up front, you'll generally assuage most worries. 37. Your employee is always pushing back, arguing, undermining your authority. It can be exhausting to have an employee constantly push back on every minor request or decision. As a boss, you don't want to resort to "because I said so," but you also don't want to have to engage in endless debate. The way to address it is to name the issue and explain why it's a problem. Can I give you some feedback about something? I've noticed that you've been pushing back on assignments and decisions really frequently, at least several times a week. I want to know when you have questions about something or ideas about a better way to do it, but I have to balance that with our need to move our work forward and not debate every detail. Depending on the sorts of issues that the employee is raising and your willingness to discuss them at some later point, you could also add, going forward, I'd like you to hold the things that are more minor. And if they still seem big to you a few weeks later, put them on a list for us to discuss when we have our next one-on-one. In many cases, the person will find that many of the items don't seem as important after a few weeks have gone by. How do I correct employees about small things? A reader writes, I work for a software startup with a typical relaxed workplace vibe. I've noticed lately that I suck at managing people who behave in a particular way, presuming that it's okay to do something without asking me when it actually isn't okay. For example, if someone asks if he can take a break when it's not appropriate, I can easily correct him and set expectations. But if he announces that he's taking a break and then walks off, I freeze and have no idea how to respond. As these are not always situations that I've anticipated, I want to make sure I'm addressing them fairly while thinking on my feet. I also don't want to say something publicly that could be considered passive-aggressive. Any tips on how to manage these situations better? Just be matter-of-fact and assert what you need, which, as the manager, you have standing to do, so you don't need to feel weird about it. If you don't speak up when something is a problem, you're not really doing your job. That doesn't mean that you always need to get it exactly right in the moment. Most normal people can't do that every time, and it's fine to address it later if you miss it in the moment, as long as you do it reasonably soon afterward. But the flip side of this is that you don't want to come down on people inappropriately hard either. What you want is to be comfortable simply stating what you need in a confident, straightforward way. For example, if someone announces that he's taking a break at a time that would be disruptive to the work, you can calmly say, actually, I need you to finish up X before you go, so maybe in half an hour instead? Thanks. If someone interrupts you in a meeting, you can simply say, I'd like to finish what I'm saying, and then we'll come back to you. If someone says, I'm letting the shippers know we're going to need an extra day before we send the file, and that will throw you off schedule, you can say, I'd like to stick to our original mail date. Tell me what holdup you're running into, and let's see if we can solve it in a way that doesn't delay the job. The idea is not to make your actually no into a big, fraught thing. You're just calmly asserting appropriate authority. You can be perfectly kind and friendly while doing it, as long as you're clear, and, if needed, firm. Also, keep in mind that in many contexts, it should be okay for people to simply let you know what they're doing without asking for permission. So be sure that when you object, it's in cases where you really do need to, and not just because you're annoyed on principle that they didn't check with you first. You want to encourage independent judgment and decision-making, and you want people to be autonomous to whatever extent their jobs and their professional maturity allow. So if you do feel yourself wanting to step in just on principle, resist that urge. 38. You lost your cool and snapped or yelled at someone. Even the best managers can find themselves so frustrated that they lose their cool and snap at an employee, or worse, yell. If you find yourself embarrassed about how you behaved with an employee, chances are that you should apologize. Managers sometimes hesitate to apologize for their own behavior, fearing that it will make them look weak. But admitting that you were wrong and taking responsibility for it is likely to increase people's respect for you, as long as you're not flipping out and yelling at people every day. More on that in a minute. Say it this way. I want to apologize to you for my tone when we spoke yesterday. I was concerned that we were off course from the plan we'd agreed to, but that's not an excuse for snapping at you. I respect you and your work, and I'm sorry if that didn't come through. An important note, regularly snapping or yelling at employees will severely damage your staff's morale and impede your effectiveness. If you find yourself guilty of this, take a look at what's causing it, whether it's your own stress level, a problem with an employee that you need to address differently, or something else. 39. You realize you were wrong about a policy or decision. Life as a manager gets much easier when you realize that you don't actually need to be infallible, and frankly, can't be infallible. You're going to make mistakes and occasionally call things the wrong way, and that's okay. The important thing is to be transparent about it when it happens, because that's what builds trust and credibility with your staff and others around you. For example, I want to be upfront that I think I made the wrong call on the X project. I've taken another look at the strategy, and I'm convinced that Raquel and Ashra were right when they advocated Y from the start. So we're going to do Y, and I want to own up to calling this one wrong. I appreciate you all working with me to implement the new policy on time off. Now that we've had a few months to see it play out, I'm realizing that it's not addressing our scheduling needs as well as I'd hoped it would. Rather than stick to something that isn't working well, I want to recognize that reality and return to our old policy while I continue to try to figure out if there's a better way to address this. And I welcome ideas for better ways to combat the scheduling crunch from anyone who has them. I want to apologize for asking you to work late last week. I had thought that we needed to have the X project out the door by the next day, and I hadn't anticipated the delay that we ran into. I know you canceled your plans to make that deadline, and I'm grateful that you did, and sorry that it turned out not to be needed. 40. You catch an employee in a lie. I once managed someone who told me that she'd sent an important email to a vendor when I was 99% sure from the context that she hadn't. Because this wasn't the first time I'd doubted her veracity, I said this to her. If I'm wrong about this, I'm going to apologize profusely. But can you show me in your computer where that sent email is so we can look at it together? There was a long, uncomfortable pause, and then she confessed there was no email. In that case, I ended up firing the employee because that was the last straw in a string of problems. Firing someone won't be warranted every time, but it's important that when you catch someone lying, you address it. Someone who thinks it's okay to operate that way is someone you can't trust or rely on, and you have to be able to trust people in order to continue working together. If you catch an employee in a lie that isn't job-ending, say something like this. I'm very concerned that you told me that Olive knew you'd be out yesterday and was fine with covering for you when she actually didn't know anything about it. What happened? Assuming that the person doesn't respond with an explanation that clears everything up, you'd then say something like this. I need to be able to rely on what you say to me and trust that it's correct. If I can't do that, I'd need to second guess everything you say, and that's not good for either of us. You've always done good work here, so I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt that this was a one-time lapse in judgment, but I want to be really clear how essential it is that I be able to trust what you tell me in the future. 41. Your employees or job candidate's parent contacts you. One weird result of the trend toward more involved parenting has been the inappropriate over-involvement of some parents in their kids' work lives, like calling employers on their behalf to ask, "Why didn't you hire my kid?" Or, "Can you please approve Imogen's time off request for our family vacation?" If you're thinking, no way, because this is obviously a ridiculous thing for a parent to do, it's really something that has started happening in recent years. I even once had an employee's mom, a lawyer, contact me on her law firm's letterhead to complain about a work issue her daughter was facing. It turned out the daughter hadn't reported the facts correctly to her mom. If this happens to you, you don't need to play along. In fact, you shouldn't. It's important for these parents to hear that what they're doing isn't appropriate. You can and should refuse to talk to them about their kid and explain why. I only discuss performance ratings with employees themselves. This isn't something I'm willing to discuss with an outside party. I'm certainly willing to talk to your son about why we rejected his application if he contacts me directly, but we don't talk to third parties about that kind of thing. To either of these, you could also add, "For what it's worth, this kind of call reflects poorly on your son and could really harm his professional reputation, so I urge you not to intervene in his work life in the future." 42. Your employee is drinking too much at office social events. Office social events can be tricky. They're social, so people let down their guard more than they otherwise might at work. But they are still work events with potentially serious ramifications for people's work reputations and relationships. If you have an employee who drinks too much at office social events, you have an obligation to speak to the person, both for the person's own sake and for the comfort of her coworkers. Start with something like this. "At a few happy hours recently, you seemed more than a little tipsy. Everything okay?" It's possible that you'll hear something that will make the next part of the conversation less necessary. Maybe the person was adjusting to a new medication, or has already realized that she overdid it and vowed not to let it happen again. But you want to start by asking, so that you're not launching into a lecture that doesn't quite fit the context. But assuming that you don't hear anything like that, the next thing to say is, "You are being pretty aggressive with others who were there, and you said some things to Matilda that I don't think you would have said if you were sober. Going forward, I want you to watch your alcohol intake at work events and limit yourself to one or two drinks at most. You do great work, and I don't want overindulging to impact your reputation or your relationships with colleagues. Our receptionist won't stop hugging people." A reader writes, "We have a gregarious receptionist who regularly solicits hugs from people, not from other employees, but from outside frequent visitors and volunteers who come into the office. Most often, this happens when someone first arrives, usually with people she knows but hasn't seen in several days. But I've also seen her approach a visiting guest speaker whom she had never met before with a hug, so I was a bit surprised by that. These are not simple, polite hugs of greeting, but rather demonstrative productions. She also does it in a way that draws a lot of attention to herself. For example, she'll sometimes go for a longer-than-necessary full-body hug. I'm not sure how else to describe it. She has a naturally loud voice, so even if I'm in another room, I can usually overhear the accompanying expressions. She'll loudly announce how good it feels to be hugged. It just seems overly self-indulgent and unnecessary. I'm not trying to be judgmental, but I know that others have expressed discomfort with it. Some people have directly told her that they do not hug, but others seem to tolerate or accept it, while others seem completely fine with it. But at least one person has complained to me that it's very unprofessional. I will have to do a performance review with her in the future and would like to address the topic then. I intend to give this employee a clear recommendation that she scale it back significantly. But where is the line exactly in something like this?" I'm not sure I can say exactly where the line is, but it's somewhere far, far away from where this employee has ended up. It's not that hugging someone is never appropriate in an office. There are offices where the occasional hug occurs, but it certainly shouldn't be the default mode of greeting someone. Regardless of where the line is for normal people, though, your employee has shown an inability to judge when it is and isn't appropriate, so it just needs to stop entirely. Don't wait for her performance evaluation to talk to her. Do it now. Performance evaluations shouldn't have surprises in them. You should be giving people feedback throughout the year. It's not fair to blindside someone in a review, and it's also not good management to neglect problems until then. I know that it sometimes feels easier to wait for the formal evaluation, but that would be abdicating your responsibility as her manager. Say something like this: "I really appreciate how friendly you are to visitors to the office. However, not everyone is comfortable with being hugged in a professional environment, so I need you to stop that. It's true that some people are comfortable with it, but others aren't, and people in the second group won't always speak up because they don't want to create awkwardness. I know your intention is to be welcoming, but different people have different physical boundaries. And in an office, we need to err on the side of making sure no one feels uncomfortable. So that means no more hugging." And you need to be very direct about this. Don't be tempted to just tell her to, quote, scale back the hugging, unquote, or, quote, limit it to people you know, unquote, because she's already shown that she doesn't have appropriate judgment in this area and can't tell when someone would or wouldn't be comfortable with it. If she continues to argue, you can simply say, be that as it may, no more hugging going forward. But talk to her now. Don't wait. I can almost guarantee you that some people who need to visit your office are dreading it because of the unwelcome physical embrace they know they'll receive. 43. Asking your staff not to buy you holiday gifts. If you're a manager, it can be uncomfortable to receive gifts from employees. Because of the power dynamic, people can feel obligated to purchase gifts when they don't want to or can't afford to. And that's especially true if they see their coworkers getting gifts for the boss. But it can be tricky to figure out how to discourage your staff from giving you gifts without feeling presumptuous. Maybe they weren't planning to give you a gift anyway. Or Scrooge-like. Here are two options. I know this is the season of office gift giving, so I want to say up front that simply doing your jobs well is enough of a gift for me. Please spend your money on your family or yourself, and know that I'm incredibly grateful to have a staff like you. I don't want to assume anyone is thinking of getting me a gift, but just in case you might be, I want to say that while that's very kind of you, please put that money toward your family and friends instead. And of course, say something early enough that you can preempt any gift buying or angst about gift buying. The beginning of December is usually good timing. However, if you receive a gift from an employee anyway, you should accept it graciously, assuming it's not extravagantly expensive. You don't want to make people feel bad, which is the likely outcome if you refuse to accept a small gift on principle. Instead, the idea is to ensure that your staff doesn't feel obligated to use their money to buy things for you. 44. How to address problems you heard about secondhand. When you hear reports of a problem that you haven't observed firsthand, ideally you'd find ways to try to observe it yourself. For example, if you hear that an employee keeps leaving work early, you could make a point of stopping by her office close to quitting time. But that's not always possible. You might work across the country from each other, or the person might behave differently around you than around coworkers. Or the problem might be serious enough that you can't wait to try to observe it happening again, like yelling at a client. When you need to act on something that you know about only secondhand, the most important thing is that you not assume that what you heard was true or that you have the full story. It might be true, and you might have the full story, but starting with that assumption when you don't know for sure is unfair to your employee. Say something like this. I don't normally like to rely on secondhand reports, but sometimes there's no way around it. I've heard that you might have lost your temper with Karen and Jamal the other day. I know I might not have the full story, so I wanted to ask you what happened. 45. Telling an employee he didn't get a promotion. When you have to tell someone that he didn't get a promotion he was hoping for, the best thing you can do is be as honest and straightforward as you can about the reasons. Let the employee know that he's valued, and talk about what, if anything, he could do to be a stronger candidate for a promotion in the future. Here's what it might sound like. I want to let you know that we've made a decision about the communications director position, and we've decided to offer it to an outside candidate. I know this is probably disappointing news, so I wanted to tell you in person and explain a bit about the reasoning. You have really great relationships with reporters and a particular talent for thinking up creative ways to get our message into the news. The area where you were less strong was in managing a team. We ended up going with a candidate with more experience managing a team of this size because doing that well will be so crucial for the role. That said, I've never seen anyone grow in this role as quickly as you have in the last year. And the contributions that you're making to our media presence are huge. You're a big part of the reason that we had as much success this year as we did. I want to make sure that there's a path for growth for you here, and I'm planning to talk to the new director about creating ways for you to get more management experience so that the next time a promotion opens up, you'll be better positioned for it. We can talk about that more whenever you want, but for now, I wanted to let you know the decision. Of course, If the reality is that there isn't likely to be much of a path for promotion for the person, be honest about that. For example, you might say something like this. I want to be upfront with you that because we're such a small staff, there's not a whole lot of opportunity to move up from this role. The jobs above this one all require pretty senior level media experience, and unfortunately, we don't have a way to get you that experience. I know that means that in order to move up, you'll need to leave us at some point, and I'll support you however I can when that time comes. But in the meantime, you're a hugely valuable part of our work here, and I hope we'll get to keep you around for a while before that happens. 46. Turning down a request for a raise. Can you turn down an employee's request for a raise without destroying the person's morale? In many cases, yes, as long as you handle it the right way. Here's how. 1. Hear the person out. Even if your initial private response is that a raise would be totally unwarranted, it's useful to know why she thinks she deserves one, and you want her to feel that you gave her a fair hearing. So if the person hasn't already explained her reasoning, say this. Tell me more about what you're thinking and why. 2. Ask for some time to consider the request. Even if you're still confident that you shouldn't grant the raise, it's smart to ask for time to consider it. You might find that sitting with the request for a while actually does change your thinking. But even if not, you want your employee to see that you gave it real consideration. But don't take too long. You don't want to leave the person hanging, especially if the answer is likely to be no. Say something like this. I appreciate your raising this, and I'd like to take some time to consider it. I'm going to give it some thought, and we'll get back to you by the end of this week. 3. Once you think it over, if the answer is still no, explain your reasoning. Be as straightforward as you can. For example, I've taken a look at how your salary compares with the salaries of other people here and in the market more broadly. Based on that, I believe you're paid competitively for the role. If you consulted with HR on salary data, be sure to mention that as well. We've talked in the last few months about areas I'd like you to work on approaching differently, such as taking more initiative on projects and having clearer communication with colleagues. You've gotten a good start on tackling those, but I'd like to see sustained improvement there before we revisit your salary. I think you made a good case for a raise. Your work has been excellent. And you're right that your responsibilities have increased. The reality is that we just don't have the cash flow to say yes right now, especially with the budget shortfall. 4. Explain what it would take to get a yes in the future. For example, one path to a raise in the future would be to take on more paralegal work. If that's something that interests you, we could put together a plan to start getting you more experience in that area. If you show me over the next 6 months that you've made significant progress in the areas we've talked about focusing on, I'd be glad to take another look at your salary then. This is just about the budget, not about whether you deserve it. You're at the top of my list to revisit this as soon as we get more breathing room in the budget. 47. Warning someone that his job is in jeopardy. If you have serious concerns about an employee's performance or behavior, and those concerns could conceivably lead to your letting that person go at some point in the future, you must tell the person now. Too often, managers don't give a clear warning. And as a result, the person ends up blindsided when he loses his job. Ironically, managers who shy away from giving this kind of clear warning are usually avoiding it because it feels like an unkind message to deliver. But it's so much more unkind to deny someone the chance to know how serious your concerns are. So you must say it. If you're like most people, it will be a hard conversation, and you will be very tempted to soften your language. But it's crucial that you don't. You need to be very explicit so the message isn't lost. Here's one way to do it. I'm hopeful that you'll be able to make the improvements we've talked about, but I want to be transparent with you that these issues are serious enough that they could jeopardize your job here. That said, I'm committed to working with you to help get your work to where we need it, and I hope that we can make it work. Or, when you're ready to commit to a timeline for resolving the situation. I'm hopeful that you'll be able to make the improvements we've talked about, but I want to be transparent with you that these issues are serious enough that if you're not able to show strong progress over the next month, I will need to let you go. But I'm ready to work with you however I can over the next month to help get your work to where we need it to be, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to. 48. Letting someone go. Firing an employee is one of the hardest things that managers do. It's also one of the most important because you'll never accomplish as much as you otherwise could if you don't address performance problems head on. Plus, keeping low performers around is terrible for the morale of the rest of your staff, as you probably know if you've ever worked with someone who didn't pull her weight. The most important thing to know about what to say when letting someone go is that in 99% of cases, the firing shouldn't come as a surprise. It should be the final installment in a conversation that's been ongoing, one in which you've talked about the problems, talked about what needs to change, and been honest that lack of improvement could result in your having to let the person go. If you've done that, then the actual firing conversation should sound like this. When we talked 2 weeks ago, we discussed the fact that if you didn't meet the benchmarks we had laid out, we wouldn't be able to keep you on. Unfortunately, although I know you have been trying, we're now at that point and have decided to let you go. If you weren't quite that clear previously, for example, if you talked about the problems but didn't give a specific timeline, say this and vow to be more transparent in the future. We've been talking for the past few months about the changes that I needed to see in your work. I know that you've been trying, but unfortunately, I haven't seen the improvements that I needed. I think ultimately this just isn't the right match between your talents and what we need, and we've decided to let you go. The next thing to cover is logistics, because the person is likely wondering exactly what this means, such as whether she's supposed to leave immediately or work out the rest of the day or week, whether you'll pay any severance, and so forth. So address those concerns proactively. Today will be your last day, and you're free to leave after this meeting. You don't need to worry about wrapping up any loose ends with your work. We'll pay you through the end of the month. And if there are things you need to get from your desk, you can either do that right now, or I can send them to you if you'd prefer not to have to deal with that now. Do you have any questions about logistics that I can answer for you? A few important notes. Deliver the decision early in the conversation. Don't try to ease into the news or soften the blow, or you risk the person's not realizing that the decision has been made and that it's final. You don't want her sitting there thinking that this is just another feedback conversation or trying to sway your assessment. Keep the conversation relatively short. You've made your decision, and this shouldn't be a debate. Let the person know the decision. Say that you appreciated her efforts, if that's the case, and then cover logistics. Throughout the conversation, you want your tone to be kind and compassionate. It's okay to acknowledge that you're sorry this is the outcome. 49. Telling your team that you've fired someone. Telling your team that you've fired someone can be tricky. In some cases, everyone will have seen it coming, agree that it needed to be done, and be relieved that you addressed the situation. In other cases, people might feel blindsided, since it's not always obvious to coworkers when someone is struggling with his work. When people feel blindsided, it can cause drama and angst, because you'll get people speculating about what happened, and some people will wonder if they too need to worry about being fired. At the same time, you want to protect the fired person's privacy and dignity to the extent that you can. So in most cases, the reasons for the firing should be on a need-to-know basis. The thing that will help most here is to be open with your staff about how you address performance problems in general. Let them know that people are clearly warned and given a chance to improve before being let go, except for egregious situations like embezzling or punching a coworker. If people understand that you don't make arbitrary or unfair personnel decisions, and that they'll know it if their jobs are ever in jeopardy, there's likely to be a lot less drama around firings. So what do you actually say when you need to share news that you've let someone go? You can start with a pretty light on details message, as long as you're clear about the basics. For example, today was Clea's last day, and we wish her the best. We're going to launch a search for a replacement right away, But until that person is hired, Jordan will be temporarily handling her projects. If you're pressed for more details after that, you can say something like this. I want to respect Clea's privacy, but yes, we let her go. I know that when that happens, it can feel surprising to the person's coworkers, who might not have known there were problems. But I want to stress that it's not something that would have come as a surprise to the person herself. When we make the decision to let someone go, it's generally after multiple conversations with the person about what the issues are and chances to show improvement. So I want to be sure you know that except in very egregious situations, it's not something that would ever come out of the blue. 50. Telling your team you're leaving. When you tell your team that you're leaving your job, the first and biggest question on their minds is going to be what it means for them. Is a new boss coming in who's going to change everything? How long will they be without a manager? How will things work in the interim? You might not have the answers to all or any of these questions, but you should be prepared to tell them something, even if it's just the timeline for figuring out the answers. Here's how it might sound. I have some bittersweet news to share. I've made the difficult decision to leave my job here and accept a position managing communications for another firm. I'm excited about the new job, but sad to be leaving all of you. You've been wonderful to work with. I'll miss our work here and you personally, and I'm looking forward to staying in touch. I know you probably have a lot of questions about what this means for the department. We're in the process of figuring out all the details, but I can tell you that I'll be here through the end of the month, and my top priority will be helping to get interim management in place so that things keep running smoothly. We'll also be looking to bring in a new permanent person to fill my role, and I'll share details on that process as soon as I know more. Chapter 4. Conversations with your job interviewer. Job interviews probably have the strangest and most obvious power dynamics of any of the conversations in this book, or at least they feel that way to most people. It's common to feel that your interviewer holds all the power and you're supposed to simply wait to receive her judgment. And sure, your interviewer is indeed assessing you. For an interviewer, that's the point of the conversation. But it's not a one-way street. You should be assessing your interviewer and the company and the job right back. Just as much as your interviewer is there to figure out if you're the best match for the job, you're there to figure out if the job is the best match for you. That doesn't mean there aren't some power dynamics in interviews that you need to play along with. There are, and they usually come in the form of double standards. For instance, it's considered okay for your interviewer to answer a call in mid-interview, but that would be a pretty shocking breach for you to do that. Your interviewer can get away with being a bit late, although not hours late, while you're expected to be precisely on time. That's just how the conventions in this process have shaped up. But when it comes to interview power dynamics, the thing to remember is that your interviewer isn't doing you a favor. This is a business conversation, and your interviewer is hoping that you will be the solution to a business problem, the job vacancy. You're there for a business reason too, to determine whether you'd like to enter into a business arrangement with this employer. And you should handle it the same way you would any other business conversation. That means that you should expect to be treated with a reasonable amount of consideration and not, for example, be left waiting for 2 hours before your interviewer shows up or have your interview canceled at the last minute without profuse apologies. Remember to assess whether you want the job and whether you would be good at it. Don't let that get lost in your focus on getting the offer. Ask the questions that you need answered in order to determine if this is a job that you'd want, in a culture you want, working with and for people you'd want to work with and for. Feel free to assert yourself if you're being treated poorly. Be candid if you decide that the job isn't for you. Once you realize the interviewer doesn't hold all the cards, you'll come across as a more confident and appealing candidate, and you'll probably find interviews much less stressful too. With that groundwork laid, let's look at some of the trickier conversations that you might need to have in this process and how to handle them. 1. You're called out of the blue for a phone interview you weren't expecting. Smart employers schedule phone interviews in advance, but there are plenty who will call you up and try to interview you on the spot without any warning. If it's a good time for you, if you're in a reasonably quiet place where you're not likely to be interrupted, and if you don't have to dart out the door in 10 minutes, then great. Maybe you're comfortable doing the interview then and there. But if those things aren't true, if you're in the checkout line at a grocery store, or you just woke up, or you're in the middle of an open office with coworkers all around you, it's okay to explain that you can't talk at the moment and ask to reschedule. I'd love to talk, but I'm at work right now and heading into a meeting. Is there a time later today or tomorrow when I could call you back? I'm glad to hear from you. I'm not in a spot right now where I can easily talk. Is there a time later today or tomorrow when I could call you back? 2. You're going to be late to your interview. Ideally, you'd never be late to an interview and would always arrive with plenty of time to spare, the picture of calm. But if disaster strikes and you realize that you're going to be late, call the employer as soon as you know, give your best estimate of when you'll arrive, and be extremely apologetic. The thing to keep in mind here is that the interviewer doesn't know you and has no way of knowing if this is highly out of character for you or if you're someone who's going to be late all the time once you're on the job. Because of that, the way you handle the situation will carry a ton of weight. So it's crucial to make it clear that this isn't your normal MO. You can do that by sounding mortified and making it clear that you take the lateness seriously. For example, when you call to explain that you're going to be late, you could say this: "I'm so sorry. I gave myself plenty of extra time, but there's a huge traffic jam on Route 45 that will probably make me about 20 minutes late. Will that still work for your schedule? I, of course, understand if it won't." Then, when you arrive, apologize again. "I'm so sorry about being late. I'm neurotic about punctuality, so this is pretty mortifying to me." That may seem like a lot of apologizing for something that can happen to anyone. But again, it goes back to the fact that they don't know you yet and don't know what your normal habits are. 3. There's a mistake on your resume. Of course you want your resume to be flawlessly polished, but you are human, and it's possible that something on it is wrong. Maybe you got the dates of your last job wrong, or the last line somehow dropped off the page completely, and now it appears that you never attended school, or you wrote that you graduated in 1912 rather than 2012. First, know that if you got an interview, the employer couldn't have been too put off and may not have even spotted the error. Still, though, it's smart to address it up front, both so that you can demonstrate that you aren't oblivious to it and so that you can correct the information. Plus, you'll give your interviewer a chance to see you gracefully handling an awkward situation, which is not a bad thing. Here's what it might sound like. "Before we get started, I want to mention that I saw that somehow the version of my resume that I sent you cut off the portion about my education. Here's a version that includes it. Before we get started, I should note that despite what my resume says, I did not actually graduate in 1912. It should say 2012. I'm normally a neurotic proofreader, so this is mortifying, and I hope you aren't disappointed that I'm not a centenarian." Now, what if you didn't notice the error and the interviewer brings it to your attention? In that case, try something like this: "Oh no, thank you for bringing that to my attention so I can fix it. I am normally a neurotic proofreader, so this is mortifying." 4. You don't understand an interview question. If you don't fully understand a question in your interview, don't try to bluff. Simply ask your interviewer to clarify the question. Say any of these: "Could I ask you to repeat the question? I want to make sure I'm understanding. Are you asking blank, restate in your own words? I'm not sure I'm completely following what you're asking, and I want to make sure I give you the answer you're looking for. Can you put it a different way?" 5. You're stumped by an interview question. If you're totally stumped by an interview question, the worst thing you can do is to try to bluff your way through it. If the question is an important one, the interviewer is going to be able to tell you're bluffing, and that's not good. Instead, be upfront about it. You'll come across as having more integrity, and good interviewers will appreciate seeing you handle the situation with grace. What to say depends on the type of question you were asked. If it's a question about your knowledge of something, be honest that you don't know, and then talk about how you'd go about finding the answer. You know, I actually don't know the answer to that. When I've encountered similar things in the past, I've done X and Y, and that usually gets me pointed in the right direction. On the other hand, if the question is more along the lines of, tell me about a time when you had to do X, and you can't think of a good example to share, just be straightforward about that. Then, ideally, you'd either share an example of something related, although not identical, or talk about how you think you'd approach the situation if it occurred. For example, it's a good question. I'm having trouble thinking of a time when I've encountered that at work, but if it did come up, I'd approach it this way. 6. The company has terrible online reviews from employees. If you're interviewing with a company that has terrible reviews on a site like Glassdoor or otherwise has reputation problems, you might be wondering if there's any way to ask about it in your interview. As long as you bring up the topic professionally, it's a perfectly legitimate thing to ask about. You are considering tying yourself to this company for the next few years, so you shouldn't let fears of awkwardness stand in the way of getting your concerns addressed. The key is to frame it in a way that doesn't set your interviewer on the defensive. So your tone should be collaborative rather than accusatory. You want to sound as if you're giving them the benefit of the doubt, even if secretly you're not. For example, I noticed that the company's reviews from employees on Glassdoor frequently include concerns about culture and work hours. I'm curious what your take is on those issues and whether they are something the company is working to change. 7. You're getting conflicting information about the job from different interviewers. Talking to multiple people throughout an interview process can be a huge benefit because you can get different perspectives on the job, the culture, the challenges of the role, and so forth. But if you notice that you're hearing different things about key elements of the role, like what the job's focus will be, or what's most important for the person to achieve in the first year, it's important to clarify what's going on. Otherwise, you risk ending up in a job that is different from what you were signing up for, or where no one can agree on how your success should be measured. How to say it? I've heard different perspectives on the job from Anna, Fergus, and Portia. It sounds as if some people want to see the role focus on expanding the training curriculum, and some people want to see it focus on bringing in new business. Can you help me get a better sense of how those will be balanced, and whether there's internal alignment about what people want to see from the position? 8. Your interviewer asks about your religion, ethnicity, plans for children, or other inappropriate topics. Contrary to widespread belief, it's not illegal in the United States for an interviewer to ask you about your religion, ethnicity, marital status, number of children, or plans for kids. However, it's illegal for an employer to make a hiring decision based on your answers to these questions, and therefore, smart employers don't ask them. And understandably, encountering these questions makes job seekers nervous, since it raises the specter that the interviewer might discriminate against you in some illegal way. But that message hasn't reached everyone, and you may encounter an interviewer who asks one of these questions anyway. Sometimes even interviewers who know better do it as part of making small talk, not thinking about how, in the context, it may freak you out. So what do you do if you encounter this kind of question in an interview? If it truly seems like the question is being asked as part of making small talk, that your interviewer is just trying to be friendly and build rapport, you'll usually get a better outcome by answering in that spirit. But if you get the sense that the interviewer is, say, asking whether you're married out of concern that you'll want time off soon to have babies, or is asking what church you go to because she doesn't want to hire any godless heathens, that's a different situation. In that case, here are some options. Address what you think the interviewer's concern really is. For example, if you think an interviewer is concerned that having kids means that you won't be at work reliably, say this. There's nothing in my personal life that would interfere with my ability to work the hours needed and make the job a top priority. Ask why the interviewer is asking. You have to do this carefully because if you seem adversarial, the interview will likely never get back on track. But try saying one of these pleasantly and with a tone of genuine curiosity. Why do you ask? I've never been asked that before in an interview. What makes you ask? 9. Your interviewer takes you to lunch at a restaurant with nothing on the menu you can eat. Interviews over lunch can be tricky under the best of circumstances, but when you have dietary restrictions, you're vegetarian, kosher, gluten intolerant, or so forth, they can have a whole new layer of challenge to them. Ideally, if you have dietary restrictions, you'd mention them as soon as you learn that your interview will take place over lunch. For example, "That sounds great. I should mention that I'm vegetarian in case it affects where we go. It's pretty easy to find something vegetarian at most places these days, but I thought I should mention it just in case." Or if you want to discourage the lunch idea, "I really appreciate the invitation to lunch. I keep kosher though, and it can be tough to find a kosher restaurant around here. It's so kind of you to offer, but it might be easier to skip lunch for that reason, if that works on your end." But what if lunch was sprung on you with no warning, and you find yourself walking into a restaurant where it's clear you won't be able to eat anything? If your interviewer is an even halfway decent person, he will be mortified when he realizes the situation and will want to fix it for you. But the earlier you speak up, the easier that will be. For example, "I should have mentioned this when we walked in, but I figured there would be something on the menu I can eat. But it looks like all they serve is seafood, which I'm allergic to. I'd be happy just to order a beverage, if that's okay. Or would you prefer to go somewhere else close by?" 10. Your interviewer is an hour late. As a job candidate, you probably know that you can't show up even 10 minutes late for an interview. But interviewers themselves regularly run behind schedule. It's annoying and unfair, and it's very much the reality of interviews. Nonetheless, as the candidate, you can certainly judge your interviewer and draw your own conclusions from her behavior. And while being 10 minutes late shouldn't be a big deal, being an hour late is truly rude and can be an indicator of serious chaos and disorganization that you might prefer not to work in. The best way to figure out if your hour late interviewer is an inconsiderate or disorganized manager, or whether there were one-time extenuating circumstances, is to pay attention to how the interviewer talks about the delay. Does she seem mortified, apologize profusely, and explain that's not how they do things there? Or does she seem cavalier about making you wait? If you're having trouble getting a sense of this, you can politely force the interviewer to address the delay by asking this: "I thought we'd scheduled for 2:00. I hope I didn't get the time wrong." If that doesn't prompt a sincere apology, you'll have just learned a lot about your prospective employer. 11. Explaining a long period of unemployment. You may have heard that employers often prefer job candidates who are already employed. And while there can be truth to that, you shouldn't let it freak you out. If you have a long period of unemployment in your recent past, address the work gap concisely without sounding like you think it's something shameful. What you say will depend on the reason for the gap, but here are some different ways to talk about it. "I was dealing with a health issue that has since been resolved." This is a very handy line because most employers won't pry for more details. Also, that last part is important because you're reassuring the employer that you're ready for work again. "I was caring for a sick family member, but I'm now ready and eager to get back to full-time work." Working on a political campaign means intense hours for months on end, so when the campaign ended, I took some time off to relax and think about what I wanted to do next. "When I left my last job, I was lucky enough to be in a position where I didn't need to find another job right away, so I spent a few months traveling and thinking about what I want to do next, and I'm taking my time and being very selective about the jobs I apply for. I'm interested in this one because I took a couple of years off from accounting after having my daughter, but I'm itching to return to work. When I found myself reading about tax law changes as a leisure activity, I knew it was time to get back to work." 12. Explaining a past firing. If you were fired from a fairly recent job, you're probably dreading being asked about it in an interview. But lots of people get fired and go on to find plenty of work in the future. Being fired is not the kiss of death for your career. The keys to talking about a firing with your interviewer are: be calm. Make sure that you don't sound defensive or bitter, because if the situation still sounds emotional for you, that's going to be a red flag for your interviewer. You want to sound as if you've learned from what happened and have moved forward. Be concise. This is crucial. Your interviewer is really only looking for a few sentences about what happened, not expecting a detailed account of what went down. Practice your answer ahead of time. Firing can be awkward to talk about. Practicing out loud makes it more